and you could just not read it, which was a revelation to me at the time. Like, oh, I can start a book and not finish it? That sounds like life-changing.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For
masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this, episode number 126, we're going to talk in depth about books we did not finish.
The dreaded DNF.
Yep.
I forgot I did a whole thing, like, an amount of time ago.
What is time?
In which I, like, did, like, this a bunch of spreadsheets about what the, like, the least finished books were, according to Goodreads.
Oh, right. You did do that.
By tracking all, like, the did not finished and, like... Put aside and everything. Put aside was yours, RJ. I don't think I actually used that one. I don't think anyone uses that other than you.
Yeah, I use that. Yep. We'll talk about it.
I can't remember. Like, I'm sure it hasn't changed much, but like, there'll be a link to that in the show notes. I don't remember why I did that. Maybe we've talked about this discussion before, this topic.
Am I misremembering, or was the number one not finished book on Goodreads, Casual Vacancy by J.K. Rowling?
Oh, really?
That's what I remember.
Oh, man.
Because that makes so much sense to me. Who are we?
I was going to say, who are we?
My name is Anna. I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA.
My name is Matthew. I'm a librarian in Guelph, Ontario, Canada.
My name is Megan. I'm an archivist in the National Capital Region of Canada.
My name is RJ. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Sorry, I was looking at the most not finished books on Goodreads.
Matthew, your spreadsheet habit has struck again.
That's fine.
I was wrong. It was not Casual Vacancy. That might have been high up there.
Okay, let me see if I can find this. This is not updated for 2021, but it was indeed the Casual Vacancy.
Oh, okay, I was right. It has changed if these are in order.
No. But see, mine, RJ, if you remember, was I combined like 10 different things.
Oh, okay.
So I combined abandoned, like couldn't finish, did not finish, didn't finish, DNF, right. Gave up on, all these different things.
Put aside. Gosh,
that's so much work.
RJ, I don't have a job. I'm unemployed.
And also, this is just how he thinks. This is, like, seriously his fun. This is his fun.
I know. Yeah, this is a spreadsheet habit that you were indulging.
Yes, yes, it is a habit. It's, yes, yeah, there might be an addiction to spreadsheets in here.
So, yeah, it was the top list was The Casual Vacancy, Outlander, The Book Thief, American Gods, and A Game of Thrones were the top five last time.
It's like a combination of a lot of hype and not necessarily matching up with what that person actually likes to read.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Highly hyped books. I think also very long books, because I feel like Casual Vacancy, Outlander,
Game of Thrones,
and Book Thief are all pretty thick. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, the Book Thief is not that thick, though.
For a young adult book, it's pretty thick.
Oh, okay. I can see that. I probably get recommends to every single adolescent alive.
Yes.
In my mind, I just think a lot of people picked up Outlander hearing about like time travel and Scotland and think it's a Highlander novel. And then just get very disappointed. I clearly don't think that actually happened, but in my mind, that is what is happening.
I was going to say, I'm like, I think you overestimate how many like deep Highlander fans there are out there who desperately want to read a novel tie into it.
I think you underestimate how many of those are out there.
It's true. I'm sure that has happened to at least one person who was like,
yes,
like heard like, oh, this is in the sci-fi section. Time traveling. I love it.
The word Lander in the title.
And they're like, oh, this is different.
RJ, I think you had something to lead us in, or...
Yeah, so I think we've already made some sort of references to, like, the dreaded DNF and DNF being this very negative label. And so I wanted to sort of open by asking what DNF means, both like to most readers and reviewers, and to us specifically, because I feel like DNF has this, you know, did not finish DNF, as people often will state at the beginning of a review, or tag it on Goodreads or whatever they're using. It has a reputation as being like below one star. Like it is like the most scathing review you can leave, which for me is not necessarily the case for books that I did not finish. But I also want to hear your guys' takes.
Yeah, I mean, there's that part, but then there's also for people who a DNF is a personal failing.
Yeah.
Like they didn't have the stamina or the understanding or the discipline to make it through. I figure this probably applies to a lot of the classics, and like you're supposed to appreciate the book and then you just didn't read it. Finally, you have to admit that you didn't finish it.
Yeah, I think that that is absolutely a thing. And that so there can be like some people who feel like DNF is sort of a personal feeling, and it may be specific to the type of book. So they may be willing to admit when they DNF'd something that like they DNF'd because they didn't like it versus and had issues with it versus those who DNF something because they feel like they couldn't make it through, and they may not admit to those as much. Mm.
I will say, Anna, I think basically anybody else would have DNF'd this Nart Saga's book by this point that you recommended to me on this podcast. But I agree. I'm almost done. I'm going to finish it.
You're such a completionist.
I'm such a masochist, were you going to say, on this podcast?
Yeah. But also in terms of reviews, maybe I've just read a lot more people who are like, I didn't finish because this book is not for me. And I respect that kind of honesty, like acknowledging, like, just because you know, that wasn't the reading experience that you were looking for, doesn't mean it might not necessarily be the reading experience someone else looking for. So that's probably part of like people who take like a professional responsibility in terms of their review giving. It's like, I want to make sure that I am honest about my experience, but also that acknowledge that other people might enjoy it for what it is.
I think that's definitely what a lot of my DNFs are. Like, if not a lot, at least some of them are just, I'm like, I can see that this is, or like, maybe I can't even evaluate it if it's good or not. I run into those. I'm like, is this good? I don't know, but it's not for me. It doesn't appeal to me. I can't say if it's good or bad beyond that, which is kind of like really a strange thing to think about. Mm-hmm.
I've been very open about my DNFing habit on this show. So, I mean, like, I treat DNFs probably differently than most people do, because I was just laughing with people before the show about, like, y'all before the show about, like, I swear I DNF like 90% of all books that I start, which is an exaggeration. It's probably not that high. But still, like, in a given year, probably half of all books that I pick up, I will DNF. And it is not the fault of the book. And I personally don't believe it is my fault either. It is just the way the reading process happens for me. So I do not count it against a book that I DNF'd it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think after our last conversation that we touched on DNFs, I don't remember what episode that was, but it was recent. I started a new shelf on my Goodreads. I was like, these ones are on pause. I want to go back to these someday. These ones, no, I'm never going back. Yeah. Which actually is annoying, because it erases my start date for the red date. So I can't say like, oh, I started this 3 years ago and then I came back and finished it. So, oh well.
That was part of bad book reading habits. But now we're talking about good book reading habits, because not finishing books can be good as well. But also, we forgot our list for the episode.
Oh, the announcement?
Oh, yes, announcement.
I mean, people know it's there. I don't know if that's true.
But they don't know what genre. They definitely don't know what genre it is. This episode is the thing.
That's true, because this is one of our legacy genres. Retro? I don't know what word to use. Throwback.
What did they use in like the Hugos? Because they fill in old years.
Oh, gosh, I don't remember.
They're the retro Hugos or the retrospective Hugo Awards. So, yeah, retrospective.
Oh, yeah. Retrospective. That's a good word. I almost said it when I said retro. So if you have been listening to the podcast recently, you know for every episode we've been putting together a list of books by authors of color. And for our genre episodes, we're doing, you know, books by authors of color in that particular genre. For these non-genre episodes on other topics, we are doing retrospective lists, doing genres that we have covered in episodes past. And we are still doing lists for episodes that I was not in. And this episode's list is religious fiction by Black, Indigenous, and people of color authors. And this is one that I do not know what counts in this genre. I feel kind of relieved that I wasn't in this episode and never have to be. I think probably that is an interesting conversation that you all had in that episode. So you can go listen to that episode and also check out this list assembled to the best of my ability of religious fiction. Fiction with like very prominent religious themes.
It is definitely something where like when is something religious fiction versus when is something fiction about religion? And It's hard to judge sometimes.
Yeah. Does it have to be like quote unquote inspirational to be religious fiction? But that is a different episode.
Yeah. This is totally the episode where I read like 17 things and got Matthew mad at me for ridiculous.
One of the episodes. The episode. In which.
Yeah. I think it's the first one where you got mad at me, but I don't remember. Like there are so many times now.
I'll just add that to next year's bingo sheet.
Check out that list in the show notes and also on our website, bookclub4m.com. That's right, right?
Yes.
I'm the one that bought it. Is it bookclub4m.com?
Yes, it is. It is. That's it.
Okay, cool.
Oh my gosh, we're all very awake this week, aren't we?
Friday night. Oh, it's not. Oh no. I just tried to go to the website and it wouldn't redirect me. It's giving me a security warning. Well, I'll look into that later.
It worked for me.
Cool. Anyway, great. Well, maybe it's just my stupid computer then. Check the show notes for that list and check out our other lists at our website, bookclub4m.com. So back to not finishing books, DNF. I love the idea of having two separate lists for books that you're going to come back to and books that you aren't, Megan. And as Matthew, I think, mentioned earlier, I don't have a DNF shelf like on my Goodreads. I have a set aside shelf because that seemed nicer and also more true to life because I might end up returning to some of these things. Some of them I might not, but it just seemed more true than I guess that is. Also, buying into the idea, though, of DNF as this, like, very negative connotation, which I do see friends, like, who you know, label books as did not finish, that aren't, like, bad, negative, scathing reviews. Just like, oh, this wasn't clicking with me, I didn't finish at, you know, 15% or whatever.
I feel like there's a difference between CNF and DNF or something like that, which would be like could not finish versus did not finish.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons I have this perception of DNF as being really negative is I'm just looking at the Smart Bitches Trashy Books reviews by grade, which is usually how I read reviews on that site. It is like I look for the ones that are either really high, like got a very high grade or a very low grade. And their range goes from squee to rant. It does have like, you know, A+, A minus in between those. And so it's squee, A+, A. And then at the bottom, it goes F+, F, DNF, rant. And so I don't know that necessarily all of their DNF reviews are like overall negative, but it certainly is giving the impression that they are.
Yeah.
So RJ, You are not, in fact, the only person to use put aside or set aside on Goodreads.
Mm-hmm. I know I have at least one friend who started doing it because I did.
You are not alone.
They're like, oh, that's a good idea.
DNF's kind of like the incomplete of the grade world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I think of. Like, I actually really appreciate the sentiment behind, like, put aside. I think that's a great sentiment. But, like, I don't know. Like, it the volume that I work at, I'm just like, it's fine. I have no idea how many of this 50% of books that I don't finish in a given year that I have started, I will actually come back to. It's probably not a high percentage.
Well, it makes me think, like, it gives this artificial framework to the reading experience where you never read part of the book, and yes, that was a good experience. You have yes to start at the beginning and read to the yes end, and then you're done, and then you give it a review, and I right don't know.
That is a huge part of it for me. Again, this is something I've talked about on this podcast before, but I'm very much about, like, I have an experience with a book, and that experience does not have to start at the beginning. It doesn't have to end at the end. It doesn't have to last all the way through. It can be broken up by as many pauses as I feel like. It can restart and reread sections over and over and over again without ever actually completing the whole thing. Like, whatever that experience is an entirely valid experience with that book. There is nothing wrong with that experience. So as far as I'm concerned, when I don't complete a book, it is not a judgment on me. It's not a judgment on that book. It is just what that experience was meant to be with me. Anyways, end rant.
Yeah, I feel like I've embraced, well, I have not fully embraced, but a few times I have marked books, like, and so much of this for me revolves around Goodreads, and maybe I should try, like, taking a year off of Goodreads and seeing how it feels to read without thinking about what shelf I'm gonna put things on. Yeah, marking books as read even though I didn't read every yeah page, like, yeah. And especially, like, I read a lot of tabletop games and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And those aren't really meant to be read, like, front to back cover for the most yep part. So I think it is fine to be like, yeah, I feel like I have read this book, even though I haven't, you know,
totally
read it all in order or read all of it.
Here's a baffling Goodreads aside. I searched to see if anyone had ever used BC4M for a shelf. And two books show up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
As having been shelved 0 times. Shelved 0 times is BC4M.
Very confusing.
I don't know how that works. And then it says nobody has shelved this book.
What books are they?
Godless But Loyal to Heaven, which I think Megan has read.
Yep.
And then Driftnet by Lynn Anderson. I don't even know what that is.
Hmm.
I use Book Club for M as my tag for things I read for the podcast.
I do too.
Book Club for M has a lot of things, but I think it's just Megan, because nothing has been shelved more than twice.
It's me and Megan.
Yeah. Yeah. And you two don't overlap that much, honestly.
Well, I mean, I think we sort of try not to read the same things
yeah
for the
yeah yeah
book club, unless it's on purpose.
I was going to say, like, RJ, that is exactly, like, your considerations about not thinking about how it's going to go on a shelf in Goodreads is exactly why I stopped using Goodreads. I felt like Goodreads was forcing me into a particular style and state of reading that did not match with my personal style and state of reading. Mm-hmm. And I did not want to be dictated to by some program as to how I could or could not experience my reading life. So I stopped using it because it doesn't match with how I read.
Exactly. You've got us to do that for you.
That's right. That's right. I got the book club to dictate how I can and cannot read. So when to DNF is one of the questions that you mm-hmm had suggested, RJ.
Yeah, I feel like we've probably talked about this a few times before, about how we make DNF decisions. I just feel like I had a moment of clarity recently, not just about books, but about, like, media in general. But, Yeah, I'll let other people start answering that question first. When do you DNF?
When I get really bored.
Sure.
One of my notes for one of the books I didn't finish recently was, I'd rather exercise than read more of this. which is not something that Megan would ever say, I think.
For sure. Matthew, you don't DNF very many things, though. Like, generally speaking, you try to complete what you start.
I do. It's terrible. But I am also just like, I don't feel I read that much prose. Mm-hmm. He said reading, you know, at least 2 to 3 books a month, probably. Yeah, I don't know. But I will like force my way through things for whatever reason.
I think, you know, that is just like a, it's just sort of a personal decision. And I do have a degree of sort of, I don't know what to describe it. It's not envy exactly, but like, I don't know, respect for the fact that you have this kind of experience with books where you really do finish what you start, because there are times when pushing through things really brings something out of it, or when you walk away with something that you wouldn't have walked away with if you had just stopped bothering partway through. But it's just, you know, it's not my method, but I appreciate the value of that method, which is basically my way of saying, like, do it however you want.
There's space for everyone in this big, 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 big tent.
The other time, so it's either boredom or anger will stop me from reading books further. And a wide variety of things can make me angry, and I guess bored. Sometimes both at the same time, even, I'm sure.
It's not a huge number of books that I have stopped reading out of anger. It doesn't happen very often, partially because I kind of know enough of like what I do and don't want to experience that I tend to avoid things. Mm-hmm. But I have done it. It has happened. Boy, that, speaking of which, that religious fiction episode was not good for that kind of stuff.
I was just thinking, like, definitely one of the reasons I will DNF a book is a full-on rage quit. The author has said something or written something or expressed something in such a way that I just cannot anymore with this person. I quit on someone because they were like, I'm going to use he because that's the universal human experience. And
whoa,
that didn't go well with me.
No.
So I've definitely done that, although I had to laugh because on the religious episode, I think I rage read at least one of the books because it was so ridiculous. Another huge category for me is it's either due back at the library or something mm-hmm. else has come in that I would much prefer to read. So I need to make an exchange because I only have so much space and you're not as exciting right now. Maybe later, probably not, but there we go. And then, like Matthew said, there's... You got the book in your lap, and you would rather do anything else than read one more sentence because it's just not catching you. After a night or two of that, I'm kind of like, okay, like, not now, obviously. Maybe not ever, but clearly not right now. And yeah. That's the kind of thing I had to get way more comfortable with like, pandemic brain.
Yeah, for sure.
Because honestly, like... A subject I'm interested in, an author I love, not right now.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Cannot appreciate it right now and would feel terrible if I forced my way through and didn't enjoy an author or a topic that I otherwise would.
Right, yeah.
There's definitely those books where, like, reading on the bus was something I used to do a lot. And if I was just, like, staring blankly at the window instead of doing anything... Instead of reading the book, I was like, oh, it's probably time to stop this. If I'd rather stare at nothing than read this book, that's not a good sign.
For me, I get into this place mostly with books, but I think also with some other like forms of media, like movies, less frequently, but occasionally. I get into this place where I feel like I should be reading the book or I should be watching the thing, but... I am not motivated to, except out of, you know, like feeling a sense of like guilt or obligation or like it would be good for me to do this. And the like moment of clarity I had recently was like in those moments, frequently, I don't end up like reading the book or watching the movie. And I also don't end up doing like something else that would be enriching to my life. I end up like putting it off by like scrolling social media or, you know, doing something else sort of like very low investment. And like, so the moment of clarity that I had was that like the moment that the guilt about not reading the thing is stopping me from enjoying something else, it is time to put it aside. It is time to DNF that and embrace doing something else, doing something like intentional instead of just doing this sort of avoidance strategy, not actually doing anything.
Yeah, because it feels like such a waste afterwards. You're like, I just spent 6 hours doing something I don't really care anything about to avoid doing this one thing instead of going, okay, but what do I really want to do? What do I really want to read?
Right.
That kind of questioning.
So here's a question based on what a couple of you have said, which is how do you treat video games? And when do you consider a video game finished?
Oh, I have been struggling with video games recently because as you all know at this point, I think I've been playing a lot of Overwatch ever since I went back into the public service world. Overwatch has been my stress release. And I right now my relationship to video games is that I play Overwatch sort of the same way as I scroll social media, in that like it is an easy, like engaging thing to do for about 15 minutes at a time that I don't have to think hard about. But I've also like gotten into the good habit of like bringing a book with me when I do that. And while I'm waiting to get sorted into the next match, we'll like read a few pages. And then play more games. I think when are video games done? I mean, when I get bored, I guess. I was going to say when I like beat the last thing, but no.
But what is the last thing? Especially with so many of them having collectibles and achievements and like percentage things. Like you can finish.
Yeah.
If it's a story-based game, you can finish the story, the main story, not the side stories, but still have like, you know, only have completed 40% of the game.
I think I don't play enough different kinds of games to really speak to like an overall strategy, because if I'm playing something fairly easy, like if I'm playing Spyro the Dragon, which I've played like dozens of times since childhood, I will 100% complete that game every time that I play through it, which I do like probably every 5 or 10 years. But like Breath of the Wild, no, I'm never going to 100% complete that game. It's too huge. It's not worth the effort. Later Alligator that I talked about on a recent episode, I mentioned that there is one character, whose mini game I can't beat, and it's the only thing like stopping me from completing the game 100%. The rest of the game, fairly easy. A few things I had to try a few times, but, I definitely hit a point with that where I was like, well, I'm not going to beat this. And I also accidentally saw spoilers for like the, like what happens, the final ending that you get if you 100% complete the game. And I was like, well, now I know and I don't have to do that. So I'm not going to.
You're reminding me, Matthew, of all the open world games I used to play where I just put on all the cheat codes and then, you know, ignore the main quest storyline. You just run sideways, you steal all the things, you run around, you kill all the monsters, like nothing to do with what they think you should be doing.
Yeah, I spent like 200 hours in Breath of the Wild before I beat the final boss, before I beat Ganon. Just like, let me collect all of the mushrooms that I need to upgrade my armor again.
And that's Legend of Zelda, in case people are unfamiliar with it.
Yeah, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
I was literally going to look it up right then.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Legend of Zelda. Yeah, so it is a huge, huge game. Yeah. So I'm not going to get all the things.
The list of people that know what Legend of Zelda is, but not Breath of the Wild, is like, I guess that Venn diagram is Anna, perhaps.
Yes. It's me. I mean, I know of Zelda. I don't think I have ever played Zelda. So.
No, I know Legend of Zelda, which includes Link, which is the little guy with the funny green hat, and that's like it.
That's it. That's my knowledge.
I was never a Zelda person before Breath of the Wild. Like, I hadn't played any Zelda games before that. But Breath of the Wild is an amazing game. In case anyone comes here for their, like, four-year-old video game review.
You're the tipping point, RJ. Someone will finally decide this is the time to play Breath of the Wild.
Someone's like, I wasn't sure how I felt, but I'm going to go out and buy a Switch and play Breath of the Wild.
But why did you bring up video games, Matthew?
Just because, like, the idea of finishing something is so different for, like, books versus video games. You know, like, people are so much... There's less stigma around not finishing them, which I think is really interesting. People are just like, yeah, just stop playing it. You know? Oh, I can say that, like, I love Final Fantasy VII, the game, you know? I've never finished it. Mm-hmm. There's other games that I will say I loved and I've just never finished them. And like, maybe I went and watched like the cinematics on YouTube or like something, but I never got to the end, or I never like, and that's even ignoring like getting 100% and doing all the side quests. That's like not even finishing the main plot. Grand Theft Auto, never ever finished any of the plots in those games. You know, you get to a point, you're just like, it's more fun to drive cars around and shoot people. And then you're just like, I'm bored of this. And then the game goes away and it goes on yourself. And I'm sure I've definitely 100%ed or like whatever, come close to a lot of games, collected a bunch of collectibles and stuff as well. But in some ways I view that as like, I don't know, like relaxing almost. It's like you just zone out and you do something, and I'm like listening to a podcast while like just wandering around collecting stuff or something. You know, it's not like as challenging potentially as the main plot might be.
Well, that's what I use the clicky games I play for. But like, I can't open a book and read it sideways the way I used to do with an open world. Mm-hmm.
I wonder, like, but people will read just passages of things?
Like, unless it was like a book of poetry or something, or maybe that's how some people read like religious texts, or I don't know, but...
I think there are some readers, particularly those who are writers themselves or who work a lot with literature, who do just dip and dive out of books, particularly if they know them well, that they will just come in and taste a bit of that book for a little bit. But that is definitely not – it's not the most common experience that people take books for, you know? No. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
I was trying to think of a like adjacent media, like how some people perhaps enjoy like film or television, like that sort of background noise type thing, because those type of media also have like the beginning and end point structure, but people don't necessarily enjoy them that way.
That's more common now, but I think you used to get like sitcoms especially where... not designed to have ongoing plots or arcs even, you know, it was just like, you could watch them in any episode. Sorry. You could watch the episodes in any order and understand what was going on. And so people wouldn't necessarily start at the first episode, might never watch large chunks of the things, because of that.
Well, I think that's interesting in relation to like how much people talk about like binge watching various shows now, and how often I see people say, oh, you got to get through season 2. It's so much better starting in season 3 or whatever it is, right? And I'm just like, really? That's the state we're at now with TV shows, where you have to watch 1, 2, or 3 seasons before you even get to something decent. But like, in order to understand it, you have to have watched those seasons, and or in order to say that you have watched that show, you have to say that you have watched the bad seasons and the good seasons.
How much content is that? Like 12 hours?
Probably. Well, depending on the show, it might be a lot more. I was going to say, yeah, it's like watch 40 hours of this and then it'll get good.
Yeah. Then it'll be good. That'll be worthwhile.
But isn't that like World of Warcraft as well?
Where the game will get good. Just like you have to grind for a while.
Yeah. I've been listening to this podcast, Mangasplaining, recently, which has a bunch of folks I know introducing Chip Zdarsky, the comics writer, to manga. And each episode, they read a different volume. And one of the things they talk about are the series that they're like, oh, yeah, it doesn't get good till volume 8. And the reason, like, something can even get to volume 8 before getting good comes down so much to how the publishing industry works for comics in Japan, where, like, you're in anthologies. And so if something's just, like, okay, you know, maybe it gets to that volume 8 before the writer, the creator finally, like, everything clicks in their head and they can actually keep going and like take off and it becomes really popular. Whereas like in comics in North America, if you're publishing single issues, if that first issue isn't good, you're not going to get to, like, you might not even hit it. Like, you might hit issue 6 and then, like, it's done. And so many series are like that. You have to hit the ground running and you don't have that buffer of time to get good. Whereas webcomics, there are webcomics where, like, you don't want to go back to the beginning to start because they're bad, but they'll get good at some point, and then you can just read from that point on, like, depending on what the style is or the format or even, like, how much you care. Maybe, like, those can work as, like, the sitcom thing I mentioned before as well. Like, some of them you just dip in and you read whatever the most recent one is, and that's fine. You don't need to know about ongoing plots or whatever because they don't necessarily have them.
I used to be very dedicated to going to the very first webcomic and reading from the beginning. But it also was because I had a lot more time.
Ah, you!
That's what we really envy of the youth.
It
Not
really
like
is.
The young bodies or whatever. It's more like, oh, so much time.
I don't feel mortality breathing down my neck.
It's interesting thinking about TV shows and watching them in order and having to make that, like, 40-hour investment or whatever to get to the good stuff. Because I think most of my favorite shows, I don't watch that much TV, but, like, I'm thinking specifically of Steven Universe and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, both of which I watched totally out of order, like, you know, started, like, smack in the middle, and then, like, skipped around to episodes that sounded interesting to me, and then went back and, like, watched it from the beginning. And I've also introduced a bunch of friends to those shows, and for them, I'm always like, we're going to start at the beginning and we're going to go in order, which maybe doesn't make any sense. maybe I should say, let me show you my favorite episode and then we'll go back to the beginning and watch it in order.
RJ, this sounds like another podcast you would do. Like, it like, maybe not you, but that somebody, they're like, yep, it's a Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Steven Universe rewatch podcast. One episode of each per podcast episode.
Not in order.
No, in order. Definitely in order.
There's definitely a Buffy rewatch podcast that I've listened to a few times. Buffering the Vampire Slayer.
I'm sure there's many Buffy rewatch podcasts.
Yeah. That one I like. That one I'll put in the show notes. I was also going to say I had a friend in high school who tried this on me and it didn't work out, where she was really into Buffy and invited me over and we just watched the Buffy musical episode. And like the whole time she was like looking at the screen and like looking at me for reactions. And I was like, I don't know who these people are. There seemed to be a lot of emotional revelations.
It's that experience of showing someone a YouTube video you think is really funny. And then they're like, you're like, it gets good. But that's only like 3 minutes. And whereas like watching that episode would be like an hour being like, it's really good, right?
I was like, this seems fine.
I think my first Buffy episode was that one, too.
The true completionist, though, RJ. You go back. You have to start with the movie before the TV show even started.
Yeah, the original movie.
Yes.
No, I've seen the movie. You do not have to start with the movie.
No, you have to go back for classic.
Yeah, you start with the movie.
The movie's not very good.
No, it's not.
No, but that's the joy of it.
If you need to finish Buffy.
You also have to watch the secret unaired, I don't know if it was unaired, the original pilot of Steven Universe where all the character models are different. That's also a thing.
This makes so much more sense as a backwards fandom thing and not a, like, getting into a new
thing. Right? This is not where you start someone if you want them to get into a thing.
Yeah.
I don't think. I don't know.
But there are people that do end up falling into those media in like weird ways. Like I'm sure someone has ended up like watching Buffy because they read some of the comics first or like something mm-hmm. like that or either the things. And there are many entry points to these things. And there's like not necessarily a way to finish it when it is a large series, a media thing. Like how do you finish Buffy the Vampire Slayer? How do you finish Steven Universe?
Oh, I finished Buffy the Vampire Slayer because I stopped following it because it got bad. The comics, I mean. But finishing Steven Universe, I mean, they're done. I guess they do still have comics as well that I haven't read all of.
There's video games and stuff as well.
Yeah. It's all the ancillary additional, you know, media tie-in stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you have to have consumed all of that in order to have completed it?
Right. Do you need to have read all of the Steven Universe picture books that got published and the art
totally
book, listened to the vinyl albums of the soundtrack?
Oh, there's definitely vinyl albums of that. That fandom would probably love vinyl.
There are. Like they released them. There are vinyl records of the Steven Universe soundtrack. It's a good soundtrack, guys.
I will say that song from the movie that is like a total bop.
That's right, I heard the story. Don't really like how it ends. She is swell to finally meet her other friend.
We're so off track.
Okay, let's talk about books. This is a book podcast. Books are in the title. Let's talk about some specific items that we did not finish and why.
I had two things that I wanted to say from way back when, one sure. of which so far back, I don't even remember what in the world the it was. I don't know. But I did want to mention briefly, Megan, that you talked about like it's due back at the library being one reason why you DNF. And that is actually one of the reasons why I don't borrow books from the library very often, because I just can never, I don't read things in a disciplined manner. I get to it when I get to it. It's just better for me to own the thing because if somebody else needs it, it will not be there when they need it or want it. And I will probably owe fines and fees related to it.
Yeah. Working in libraries gives us so much bad habits.
Oh, so mm-hmm. many bad habits on that. Ugh. I might have a few books out that have been out for over a year from my current library. Sorry. I might.
I made a little list in my... Wait, did you have another thing, Anna?
I can't remember it, so no, I don't.
Yeah, I have a list in like the notes I took for this episode for specific DNFs, and one category is just due back at the library, which is like, 80% of things that I don't finish. And I don't even put those like on Goodreads, like my set aside shelf, because that's not the same thing. Like I did not choose to not finish that, you know? The due date shows it for me. I just put that back on the want to read shelf. I consider this I have not read this.
And I know like ebooks are really convenient a lot of the times, but the automatic return sometimes is like, I would take a fine if I could just finish the last 20 pages of that book. Oh, no, I'm going to have to wait 2 months. Oh.
Goodbye, book.
Okay.
I mean, I know, well, man, I shouldn't say this. Maybe I'll get in trouble. And I don't know if this works on all devices, but I do know people who have downloaded the book like near the due date and then disconnected their device from the internet and finished reading it. And so it won't return until it connects to Wi-Fi again.
I've tried this and it just freezes. Like you can't turn the pages anymore. I don't know if it's because I'm using my phone or what.
Depends on the device.
Yeah. I think for the folks I know who do it successfully, it's with their like Amazon Kindle and they're in the US. Yep. So.
Okay.
Or a Kobo. Well,
it would make sense with a Kobo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because... I've done it with a Kobo before. Yeah.
Yeah. So many bad habits.
Of course, who knows? It's been a long time since I did that, so maybe they've fixed that one, so to speak. By fixed, I mean broken. Broken that loophole, taking it away from us readers.
Yeah.
Okay, specific titles. Who's got some?
I've got my first DNF, because I was more of a completionist, and then I'm like, I'm going to say like late teens, early 20s, and I'm reading Ayn Rand's The Fountainhead, which is 900 pages.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to say like a third to a half of the way through, and I have this sudden realization, like, I hate this book. I don't understand anything that's going on. Like, why these people? Why? And then I'm like, oh, I can just not. I don't have to sit here and like, there's no podcast coming out. Not that I knew what podcasts were at that point. Like, there's no one's going to grade me. Like, I don't have to write a book report. There is no reason I have to finish this book I am not enjoying. And I just like, oh, it felt so good. It felt so good. Very satisfying.
Yep.
Yeah. My first experience, I didn't call it DNF at that point, but I think I've told this story on the podcast before, but it was in like seventh grade, and the book was Little Women, and I was reading it for school. Like, we were keeping like a book journal of what we were reading, and I just couldn't get through it. And my teacher I remember having multiple meetings with my teacher where I was like, I haven't finished the book. I haven't finished it. And she was like, well, it's a really long book, so let's split it into multiple books. So you've already finished like one book for, you know, this semester or whatever. And when you finish the next part of it, it'll count as another book. And that kind of thing. And then like, I still was just like not finishing it, could not get into it. And like at one of these meetings, she was just like, just read something else. She's like, I think you've tried really hard on this book and you could just not read it, which was a revelation to me at the time. Like, oh, I can start a book and not finish it? That sounds like life-changing. And I never finished Little Women, and I never will. It almost ruined reading for me.
Do you remember your first, Matthew?
There was some, I don't know, middle grade book that I just tried to look up and I couldn't find out what it was, but I just couldn't understand why I disliked it so much. Like, why don't I want to read this? And then I realized that not everything that is printed is published is good. But some of the ones I do remember, I can mention three books that I did not finish that I specifically remember not finishing. The first was the third book of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And I was in New Zealand with my family, and I was like in grade 7, so like 12, 13, somewhere around that age. And, you know, sitting in the back of the car while we drove around on holiday, and I read the first two and I got into the third one, and maybe there's a spider, and I just got, I don't know. I don't even know why I stopped, but I stopped reading it. I guess I got bored, never went back, never had any interest in going back.
Can I break in real quick? It's funny that you bring that one up, because I could not have said what the first time is that I DNF'd something. But I do actually have a very early memory of DNFing the first book in the Fellowship of the Ring at the point at which they get to whatever the name of that city is where the elves all live. Who knows? What is the name of that city? I'm proving myself. Yes, thank you.
I know, because I'm on the Wikipedia page.
Thank you. I'm like, this is just proving me to be like a terrible fantasy fan, despite the fact that I used to read tons of fantasy literature, but not this one. I got to Rivendell. They started talking and having a meeting in my book. And I was like, I am not here to read a meeting.
Yeah, I definitely also DNF'd Fellowship of the Ring. And I think I've told this story on the podcast before, but I think it was even earlier where I was like 100 pages in and they were singing a song about mushrooms. And I was like, why the fuck? I was like, when is the goddamn adventure going to start? Why are we hanging out and singing about mushrooms?
So book two of my, I did not finish, was Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte. And this was assigned in high school English class. And I tried to read it and I would just fall asleep. And I tried to listen to an audiobook version and I would just fall asleep. And I never finished it. I just found it very boring. Not for me. To the surprise of nobody else on this podcast. And the third one was Lolita by Vladimir Nabokov, which I specifically remember reading on the plane back from Russia. And I think it was the first time I went to Russia, I think, as part of university for school. And I got through, like, I guess it's broken into two parts. And I read the first part, and then I realized I was doing anything else on this plane, in which I guess I didn't have other books, but read the rest of this book. And I was like, oh, I really don't want to read this book. So I never finished it. Just, I probably found it really creepy and unsettling, which is probably supposed to be, but it just, like, I don't like reading those things.
That's like American Psycho for me. I like got partway through that thing and I was like, why am I reading this? This is not for me at all on any level. I don't care if it's satire or whatever else. It doesn't matter. I don't want to read this.
Another one is the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, where I found, I think it was just the violence against women in that book just really upsetting and I didn't want to read it anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, sure. Yeah. It's like, it's a satire or something, or like, you know, it's a commentary on that. But I'm just like, I don't want to read this.
It's actually, Lolita is an interesting one because I can't say I've DNF'd that book because I've never read more than the first chapter. So I don't think it counts that I've even, you know, really started that book. But I will say I have read like that first paragraph many, many times because I actually think that first paragraph of that book is like, it is not just beautifully written, but like it is an amazing read out loud. Like reading that first paragraph out loud is incredible. After that, I don't really care anymore.
I just had this realization. Like I was thinking earlier when we were talking about video games, like the idea of speedrunning a book. And I realized like that there is actually a way of doing this for some books. And it's like you don't read the footnotes. You don't look at the references. You skip the introduction. You skip like the foreword, you know, you skip any interviews or whatever in the back, or like in some comics you have like, you know, text pages, like Watchmen is famous for this, for having text pages in between the comic sections. And so like you skip all that stuff. So like there are ways to speed run a book or a comic in some ways by just, if you've already done it, you're like, oh, I know the parts that I like. And so I'm not going to read the parts that I'm not as interested in.
By that measure, I totally speed read Watchmen.
Speed run.
I guess I didn't speed read it. That's a different thing. But I did run of Watchmen. I skipped the text parts. I skipped the like pirate ship parts.
That's definitely a strat.
Well, so that's an interesting thing that you bring up because you also mentioned like it works especially well if you already know that item. So like if you go back to reread things, like I have gone back to reread books that I really enjoyed and I skim read or even skip over little sections of things that I'm like, this section's kind of boring or I don't like what happens in this section. And so I just skim past them and they don't really happen. And then I just focus on the parts that I love.
Yeah. That's how I read like Cryptonomicon or how I used to. It's been a while.
Right.
Cryptonomicon by Neal Stephenson is one where it seems very easy since this storyline is set in two different time periods, like very easy to just read half of that book.
Yeah. You could just read like one of the characters, whichever one.
You're like, I just want to read the World War II stuff or like whatever it happens to be and just skip the rest of it. I'm sure there are people that do that. And like have they finished that book?
I mean, probably they've read it the first time already. So I don't know if it really counts as a DNF if you've already read it once.
But like maybe you're partway in and you realize you're not enjoying half the chapters, but you are enjoying the other ones.
I don't know. That seems like a lot of effort.
I could see I don't know. I feel if I reread that book, I would probably skip a lot of the present day stuff.
Yeah. I have one other DNF book in particular I wanted to mention, and it's kind of like almost the reverse of Matthew's Airplane experience. So I I was in Spain. I was walking across Spain doing the pilgrimage thing. And I hadn't brought any books with me. And about 2 weeks in, we landed in a city that was large enough that it had an English bookstore. And I was desperate to read something. Like, this is probably the longest period of my life I've gone without reading anything. And I picked up this beautiful, like, it's got the gold edging on the pages kind of thing, little copy of Moby Dick. And so I was reading that when I was at the hostels, at the dormitories stuff. And I didn't finish it before I finished the walk. And then there was, like, you know, the rigmarole to get home. And so I never finished the book. But I didn't feel like, oh, I had a bad experience or whatever, or it was due back or anything. I still owned the book for like, a decade or more afterwards. But it felt like I wasn't in the space in which I was reading in which it was an enjoyable experience. And so having left it like that, like, it was forever a positive, like, really warm feeling that I have towards the book of Moby Dick, even though, like, some parts of it are really ridiculous and stuff. And so it didn't occur to me until later that maybe it was so much, like, time place thing for the reading experience. That was part of why I never picked it back up again.
Yeah.
I've got, I don't know, in some ways the other, like, I've read, and Anna, this probably ties into, like, one of the reasons why I do finish the books I've read is because I've been in so many places where, like, I haven't had a lot of options in what to read. And so I'll just read what I've got. And, like, in that, I don't buy a lot of books that I haven't read or that I won't read. But in Southeast Asia, when I was there, I think I had, like, a 12 or 16 hour bus trip, and all of, like, the only book I had in the bus was, like, an annotated Gulliver's Travels, and nobody else in the bus spoke English. And so I read all of Gulliver's Travels in, like, one day because I had nothing else to do. And let me tell you.
Yeah.
Like, it is the only situation where I would have finished that book. You know, like, there's no other time when I would have started this and be like, you know, I want to go back and read this, but I'm just like, holy shit, got nothing else to do. Okay. Let's read this book and try and understand it.
I had a few more specifics that I'll mention briefly. I feel like we've touched on a lot of, like, classic literature that we did not finish, which I think is probably, like, a big category of books that people DNF for a variety of reasons, as we have illustrated. But some more recent ones, there is a book that I didn't look up the title, and I'm not going to bother because I don't fully want to tag these, like, books where the authors are still living and, you know, Googling their books in this DNF episode. But it is a autobiography, memoir. It is a nonfiction book by a prison librarian. And this was, like, right before I started library school, and I was really interested in prison librarianship. And this was the book that I found about it. And it was just so, just the expectations were so mismatched, which I think is, like, a big reason people DNF books that we might have touched on, but I don't know. For me, this was, like, the most glaring case of that, where I wanted to read about prison librarianship, and this book was very much, like, a fish out of water story about a person who didn't even, like, have a library background, and just sort of accidented his way into a prison library job, and was writing about that experience in a way that, like, at the time struck me as very sort of self-centered, and, like, I got very fed up with him as a narrator. But looking back on it afterwards, I'm like, oh, he was just writing a totally different book than the one that I wanted to read. Yeah, so I think that was the book that was the reason I made that set-aside shelf on my Goodreads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You bring up a good point about not wanting to tag the book on the DNF episode out there in the universe, but I do kind of want to talk about a very specific reading experience that I DNF'd. So I am going to mention this one.
Sure.
So a few years ago, I bought a copy of Everyday Madness by Lisa Apagnenesi. I don't know how to pronounce her name. I'm very sorry. And it's about a woman whose husband dies, and it is her mourning process. It is grief. It is all about grief. And I bought this book in the UK right before or right around the time that Matthew and I were going to live for some unknown extended period of time in different countries. And I went home and I started reading it, and I couldn't deal with it. It was making me so upset reading about this woman dealing with the grief of losing her husband and me thinking about like Matthew being so far away and what if something happened and all that. Could not deal with it. I put the book down because it was personally and emotionally way too raw for me at that moment. Weirdly, I am dealing with some much more relevant grief at this particular moment, and I picked that book back up again because, weirdly, it is now deeply, intimately relevant to my life, and I'm finding it both very raw and very difficult to read, but also very personal and of the moment in my life. And so this is this weird experience I'm having with this book where I DNF'd it for one very valid reason of my emotional experience with it. And now I'm finding myself deeply craving going back into it for almost the same reason in some ways, like a deeply relevant reason. But right now I'm at the place where this is actually what I want to deal with and read at the moment. It's a very strange experience, but I'm glad this book exists for me.
Plus, you know, because of COVID, you haven't seen me in real life for like 16 months. So you're just used to me not being around.
I'm like, who is that imaginary Matthew? Oh,
God. It's your internet Matthew.
Yeah, internet Matthew.
How are his hands so cold despite being imaginary and on the internet?
Yeah. We just need to trade the warmths.
Yeah, that's such a great illustration of how much of the reading experience is the meeting of the book and the reader.
Yeah, so much. It very much is what that was.
That was something I wanted to ask about, but I don't want this episode to go on too much. Is books that we have set aside and then actually come back to finish later? But clearly none of us has an example.
One of the things I prepped there.
Yeah. I was trying to think of an example. I'm like, I'm going to have to dig into the brain archives.
Maybe a topic for another day, for another episode.
Maybe a topic for another day. I do have one that I want to come back to that I can talk about.
Do, please.
Yeah, this is a really recent one. It is a sci-fi fantasy novel from like the last 5 or so years that I started reading like just a few months ago. And yeah, I think I won't put it in the show notes, but I will say it is by Charlie Jane Anders, who is an author whose short stories I love. I've read a bunch of her short stories like online in various like sci-fi and fantasy magazines. And I think she's a fantastic writer. But I was listening to one of her books in audiobook format, and it was just not clicking. And I even like brought up the speed and like listened to it on like 1.25, 1.5, and like even like trying to speed run it.
Yep.
It just felt like the pacing wasn't working for me. I really could not figure out like what the structure of this story was and like what, like just, It was not working for me. It was not meshing. And that is the one that I think I was reading that one on the month that I recently took off of the podcast. And that was the book that led me to that clarity moment of like, oh, if this is not working, even though I like this book and would like to return to it, I should do something else, you know, instead of just feeling guilty about this book, not finishing this book and not finishing it anyway and not doing anything else. Yeah, and I think if I had been reading it in print, I maybe wouldn't have had that experience because my thing was that, Like, it is about these two individuals, and part of the story is their childhood, and part of the story, I assume, is their adulthood, but I never got to that part, because the childhood part seemed so long. And yeah, I think, was I reading it in print, I could sort of flip forward and see, like, okay, when do we get to, like, the events of this novel that are described on the back of the book? Like, yeah, so that's one I hope to come back to soon.
Super tangent. I was reading some guy's newsletter who was talking about the impact that ebooks, or sorry, the length of books, basically, how long books are and why they're the same length that they are, or it's changed. And he was noting that one of the things that ebooks does in the self-published realm, because you can't tell how big a book is, right? And one of the arguments was that paperbacks got really fat was because they were in grocery stores and the buyers wanted more bang for their buck. So, like, each book costs the same, so they want the book with the most pages. But with ebooks, you can't see how big the book is. It's just whatever. So you could, the self-published authors, for some of them, like, instead of doing one really big ebook for the same price, cut it up into episodic events, because then you get people hooked onto the episodes, and so they're shorter. Anyway, that's tangent. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Kind of relevant.
It was interesting. Maybe a weird note to end on.
I've got one last thing I wanted to bring up, sure. Which is DNFing series instead of DNFing books. Mm. So I have a number of series that I haven't finished. And this is kind of this interesting experience I have where sometimes I grow away from the characters, or sometimes I grow away from the entire genre. And sometimes I just get bored with reading about them. But one particular one I wanted to bring up is called the Night Runner series by Lynn Floyd. And again, this is something that I probably won't tag in the
show notes.
Yeah, show notes, because I don't want to associate it with DNF. Because it's a great series. It's absolutely an awesome series. But the first three books in this series came out smack in the middle of the time in which I was just, like, devouring fantasy literature. It was what I did all day long. And then the author took a break and wrote another series called The Temir Triad. And again, this was kind of in the time when I was reading, but not as much. So I read the first one and the second one, but I never read the third book in that series because it came out in, like, just past the time when I was, like, really no longer reading fantasy. But I had loved the Night Runner series so much that when she went back and did a fourth book in that series, I did go read it, but I barely made it through that one. And I started the next one and I never finished it. And there are, like, seven books in that series, but I grew out of that time where I wanted to read that type of material. But the first books in that series, the first three, I read all three of those, like, I don't know, many times. And it remains one of my favorite series of all times, and one that I will absolutely recommend to people. But I have never finished that series, despite the fact that I love it.
Yeah.
So this reminds me, and I think maybe this is something we can close the episode on, of my announcement for 2022, which is that 2022 is the year of book twos. In which everyone should read book twos and series that you've been putting off.
All right. I feel personally attacked.
It was aimed directly at you, Megan. So you should. I've been looking at your Goodreads to read list, and there's a lot of book twos on that. So yeah, everyone, read next year. Read the second book in a series. That's your goal for the next year.
That's tough but fair. I was going to briefly mention, I don't want this episode to be any longer, but my most popular review on Goodreads is a book two. It is a volume two of a series that I did not finish. Yeah, and that is when you jogged my memory, Anna, that this is a series that I bailed on. Fables, a very popular comic series.
Yeah.
Volume 2, I hated so much. It is one of my only one-star reviews on Goodreads. And it is also, like, far and away, like, my most popular review, which I think says something about the culture of Goodreads. So if you came to this episode wanting to hear us be angry about books that we bailed on, and you're like, oh, all this nuance, who cares? Please know that I hated Fables Volume 2, Animal Farm. I thought it was so much, the concept of that series for me had so much potential that was so squandered, and it's so fucking, I just hate it. Go read my review. We can link to my one-star Fables Volume 2 review. It is a series that has had tons of success, and even though the author is alive, I don't feel that bad being mean about it.
Perfect. Fair. All right. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Like, rate, subscribe, leave a review, etc.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the foreigner name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclubform.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclubform, and find us on Twitter or on Instagram at bookclubform. Our email address is bookclubform@gmail.com. You can go to our YouTube page for videos on how to speed run graphic novels and books. No. You cannot do that. No, sorry. I just wanted to say it.
Hilarious would it be if we uploaded a speedrun video and it was just like a 20-minute video of us like reading a book really fast, silently.
No, it's like tips and techniques on how to do it better, RJ. Mm-hmm.
That sounds awful.
Okay. Did you finish that part?
Yes, I'm done. Sorry. Okay.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to things we mentioned and social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode.
You can suggest a genre or a title for us to read, or request a recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out. We don't promise to read your suggestion, because we only have so much time, but we will give you a recommendation.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, June 1st. We'll be discussing the genre of crime fiction.
Then it's almost time for our annual We All Read the Same Book episode. So on Tuesday, June 15th, we'll each suggest and talk about one title, and then you will get to vote on which book we'll all read.
Yay!
You were cutting out every time you asked the question, and so I just heard you say what like three times.
Perfect.
It's a very loud vehicle I'm letting go by.
Vroom, vroom, vroom.
Vroom, vroom, vroom. Yeah, there's some antimatter for you.
Yeah, thanks, Matthew.
Do you remember the raccoon fight, Anna? Yeah, they were in the tree outside of the window of the apartment. So we're just like watching these raccoons chase each other around and scream at each other.
I was the only prepared one.
We'll be discussing the genre of...
It's past Megan's bedtime.
We'll discuss our episode on crime fiction.
We'll discuss our discussion of crime fiction. We're doing a recursive episode.